From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. There are a lot of reasons most of us remember a toy we played with when we were kids. It was fun, of course. It's probably it, mostly. And it helped you suspend reality, which is nice when you're a kid. And then toys became companions for a lot of us. But there are a surprising number of grown-ups who still love toys. They collect them and trade them and go searching for them. There are a lot of reasons they do this, of course, but a lot of the time it's about reconnecting them with the kid part. Kerry Jackson of the radio station X96 is a toy collector, and he cops to this. A good part of his affection for toys are about his memories of them. So today in the program, we're hoping to hear from you as we reminisce about toys. We're also talking about how toys change and what they tell us about who we are. Join us after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. On cable TV's The Travel Channel, the program called The Toy Hunter is starting its second season. The show follows Jordan Hembro around the country as he goes searching for toys. Jordan is a collector and a dealer, and in pretty much every episode, you can detect what must be the hardest part of the job, not playing with the merchandise. It's a dilemma for some collectors because the most valuable stuff are the figures and the transporters and the trucks and the gadgets that are still in their packages, which means they're mint. But it also means they haven't been played with. And it was probably the playing part that got them into the business in the first place. Today in the program, we're talking about toys, and we're hoping to hear from you. What were your favorite toys when you were a kid? What did you love about them? Did you hang on to the Tonka truck or the Fisher-Price barn or the Star Wars action figures? And why? You can join us. 801-585-WEST is the number. 801-585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Jordan Hembro is the founder of Hollywood Heroes, where he sells collectible toys and film props. He's also, of course, the host of the Travel Channel's Toy Hunter, which I mentioned. Again, the second season of the show is going to premiere tomorrow night. We'll give you details about that as we go along. Jordan Hembro is joining us today from NPR Studios in New York City. And Jordan, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
With us in the studio is Kerry Jackson. He is, of course, co-host of Radio from Hell on X96 and the host of the Geek Show podcast. And most of you probably know he's an avid collector with, count them, 3 toy rooms.
Used to be 4.
Is that right?
I sold one of the toy rooms to get the down payment on the house I'm living in now.
Kerry, welcome back. Thanks for
Thank you.
Well, I want to start. I've got a lot of questions about toys, and we're going to get to practical stuff and philosophical stuff. But Jordan Hembro, I want to start with you. Does all of this stuff start with your childhood? I mean, I guess that seems obvious, but is that the hook? You got connected when you were hooked when you were a kid?
For me personally, I did. I mean, I was the perennial Star Wars geek. You know, I had all the toys when I was a kid, and I watched the movies, and I just fell in love with it. For me, it did start, you know, when I was a child, and it just flourished from there. I mean, all through my teens and my college years, I still collected the toys. And they, you know, I might not have been as out and public about it as I am now about telling everyone running around what a big toy collector I am, but I always had that passion growing up, and I truly believe that it's those childhood memories that really instills that love of collecting in all the adults.
Was that the case for you, Kerry?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. My mom says it started with Gumby.
Wow.
You know, the little plastic wire
absolutely.
Gumby. That's where it started. And then it went to Batman. And then, some, you know, Star Wars came along and boom, it was all over. But no, it is. It's all about the childhood. It's that I equate it to macaroni and cheese or a warm hug. You know, you got that toy and you're like, oh, yeah. Yeah, kidhood was good, wasn't it? Whether it was or not.
You had
great memories with the plastic army man or whatever it is that you were playing with.
So I wonder if now it seems for you guys there's a lot. It's a lot about memories and it's a lot about nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of it. There's the genuine affection part. You think they're cool, and there's the play part too, right? I mean, you still play with.
That's the most important part for me. I'm a huge advocate of you buy the toys, you open them, and you play with them. And I get these looks from people's faces, the people who listen to my podcast. How dare you? How dare you open that action figure? Well, it's meant to be played with. That's why I get them. You open them, you play with them. I'm not concerned about the financial value. the emotional, the fun value. That's what I'm all about. That's what I wanted to play with. And that's why I open a lot of the toys I get today, because the toys we had back then, and Jordan knows this, the toys we had back then weren't that great. You know, a lot of really cool toys today. Toys back then, yeah, we remember them fondly, but they weren't that great.
So what about, you know what, the funny thing is we were kids and they were great to us as we were children because it's the only thing we had. Yeah,
it's true. I do want to talk about, we'll come back to this actually, but Carrie was talking to us earlier when we were getting the show ready about how the toys that you imagined when you were a kid have now come to pass. Like the thing, because there's a kind of technology to it. But that doesn't mean you don't have this nostalgia for the old, maybe crappier toys or the older, goofier toys, I guess, right?
Right.
Well, I mean, and you mentioned Star Wars, Jordan. The one that comes to my mind is if you look at the evolution of the R2-D2 action figure, you just start there. 1977, R2-D2 action figure. It was a little barrel-shaped piece of plastic with a sticker around it. And now—
And it clicked.
And it clicked when you turned the lid.
But to us, it was high tech. You're like, oh my God, it clicks.
You're like, that's R2. That's our guy.
Yeah.
But now you've got R2-D2, and you can set him up so he'll watch your room. If someone comes in your room, he's got a sensor that will go off, and he'll start yelling that someone is in your room. You can get, like this one I brought today, you can make it dance and play games with it. You know, I mean, that's how the evolution of these toys have come along, and I think it's because guys like Jordan and I, when we were kids, we were like, I wish this toy did this. And then we got older and we got in charge of the toy companies and we went, yes, we can make this happen, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, it's the evolution is absolutely incredible. But, you know, the funny thing is as the evolution evolves and everything like that, I also see collectors and adults like me still yearning for the simpler times, because even though the R2-D2 didn't, you know, whiz and beep and light up and everything, it was that simple thing that brought us back to our childhood, and we remember it. So what's happening right now is I see a lot of adult collectors, they buy the new stuff, and I agree with you 100%, open the toys too that you truly love. But I see a lot of people buying the vintage toys too just for that huge nostalgia, you know, pop culture factor.
So I don't want to be too psychoanalytical about this, but when you're
please do. You wouldn't be the first.
Yeah, you can. Don't worry about it.
That's right. I mean, when we're kids, you know, are toys about kind of suspending reality? Like it's about allowing us a kind of fantasy?
I think they are. I mean, it's you immerse yourself into the world of play, and you for a brief moment in time, you immerse yourself and your friends and everyone else into the world that you're throwing yourself into. I mean, I could tell you right now, I remember as a child, I have vivid memories of going under my bed and creating a giant rebel command center, you know, under my bed. I have all my ships out there and I take flashlights and I put flashlights and light up the bottom of the bed. And for that moment of time, you know, I was in the Star Wars universe. And it's that suspension of disbelief. It's that moment in time that really... It allows people to really get back and get that happy memory. And the thing is a lot of the folks that I deal with, you know, they're educated, they're smart, they watch the show on Travel Channel, and they know reality from fantasy. They're not like, oh my God, I am Luke Skywalker, but they know that they can go back and, you know, recall that happy memory and you know, snap out of it when they have to. Mm-hmm.
You know, for you, Carrie, I know a bit about you from listening to your radio program. And so it seems like, I wonder if toys for you were important kind of companions when you didn't feel like you fit in.
Oh, exactly. I was talking about this earlier with a friend of mine, how it used to be called geek culture, and it was a subculture. And you were kind of afraid to share it only with certain people. Like, God forbid you wore your Starfleet uniform to school, you'd get your butt kicked. But now I think that it's mainstream culture.
Yeah.
I think you're considered weird if you haven't seen, like, Star Wars or Star Trek, or at least familiar with it in some way. I mean, Marvel Comics movies were huge and still are. Yeah. Biggest moneymaker last year was The Avengers. Who'd have saw that coming? I don't think it's geek or underground culture anymore. It is the mainstream pop culture.
You guys are out.
Yeah, we're out.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, we're out. We're out and proud. Get used to us.
This man is a TV show. He is so out.
Yeah.
Love the show, by the way, Jordan.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I truly appreciate it.
801-585-WEST, the number to join the conversation. Email address, radiowest@KUER.org. Let's take a call. Don is with us in Ogden. Don, hi.
Hi. You know, I've had toys that were focused at me, like I got a microscope, and nobody else in my family was that big into science, but it was great for me. I got a, one year I got a remote-controlled helicopter that was just a lot of fun. It was tied to a base, so it only went around in circles.
I had that, yeah. Did you? Yeah, I had that one.
That's the vertibird, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was Mattel but, made that, yeah.
You got it.
But one of the best things I ever got was something that I used for very little time, and it was called the Kooky Combo One-Man Band. And the reason that made it so special was that when I got it on Christmas morning, I was so excited. I put it on, and of course it covered the whole front of me, and I banged and I did things on it. And the whole family just thought it was so hilarious. And I brought it around the neighborhood, and all of the neighbors thought it was just so hilarious. And to this day, there isn't anybody in the family who doesn't think of that Kooky Combo One-Man Band.
Where is it? You still have it?
Oh, no, no.
No way.
It's long gone, sadly.
Jordan, maybe
no,
you can
see,
find
you,
it.
You get it. That's a happy memory, man.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
it.
That's
and
what it's all
not
about.
Just, it's not just you. It's your whole family and friends. So it's a shared experience that you're having. And no one said collecting has to be just, you know, for yourself. You can share this whole thing with everyone else, that whole experience and those memories, which is fantastic.
What's the type that collects toys? I mean, you've got, you know, some of us have, you know, a lot of us have them or kept them around, put them in the attic or something like that. But there's a special type that starts to collect them. What is that? Carrie, is there a special type? What is it about you guys?
What is it about us? Where do we begin? That's a whole other show. I don't know. I can't really say for a lot of people. I know the type of collector that I am, and it's just strictly about fond memories and, hey, isn't that cool? That's really what it's all about for me. I'm not under no delusion that I'm going to retire by selling my entire Star Wars collection. It's just not going to happen, you know? I mean, I'll sell it eventually or pass it along, but you're not going to get rich off this stuff. And if you think you are, you're going in it for the wrong reason.
Yeah, I agree.
I know a lot of guys who do that. There are a lot of people who are just like, oh, that'll be a good investment. I hear that all the time. Oh, that's a good investment. I'm like, you're in it for the wrong reason, dude. You want to invest, play the stock market, something like that. Toys, you need to be doing it to enjoy them and then pass them along.
So yeah, I agree. Yeah. And you know, if you want to break it down to a specific kind of person, emotional people collect a lot of the toys because it brings back emotions. It brings back that memory and you can get attached to it. So, you know, a lot of the people that I see collecting, I'm not going to target like a demographic, but the people that collect are kind of emotional people. They love that, you know, that feeling of I remember when and I used to love that, and they get all giddy about it. And Carrie, you're absolutely correct. You know, collect what you love. Don't worry about what you think it's going to be worth in the future.
And I have a friend who equates his Star Wars collection with the only good thing from his kidhood. He didn't have a really good childhood, you know, and that was his one escape. And mine's just the opposite. It was like a team effort with me and Mom. You know, that's we'd go hunting the Jawa figure down, you know, and it was that kind of thing. So we have that positive memory about toys. Everybody collects for their own reason.
Here's an email from Becky who writes, My Little Pony, the Smurfs and Pound Puppies were my favorite. As a child of the 80s, it's been fun to see some of the old greats making a comeback. I saved my favorite toys for my children, but it turns out I may not need to. Carrie, that's the thing, right? I mean, people are remaking the oldies and the goodies.
This is happening, and maybe, Jordan, later we can talk about bronies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You want. It's the,
I sell to a lot of them.
You do. We'll talk about that.
Oh, yeah.
But the a lot of the old toys are being recreated. I bought when I was a kid all the like Star Trek Mego figures from 74 around in that era, and they're remaking them now. I can buy the same toy, the exact same toy in the exact same shape it was when I bought it in the same packaging now from some of these collectors groups. And they're meant for guys like me. And I really should get around to opening them, shouldn't I? Following my own advice.
I mean, they've got giant websites. You know, Carrie's talking about from MeeGo and everything. They've got a great website called MeeGo Museum, which is a worldwide collecting forum where collectors go about and they talk about this corporation MeeGo that was, you know, basically they had every cool toy in the market during the 70s and 80s. But not only are they reissuing a lot of these old toys, they're adding additional characters and additional play sets that were never around when we were kids. So they're taking that happy memory we had and not only rekindling it, they're expanding upon it, which is just wonderful.
Benjamin says, hard to pick a favorite toy. I thought the Ghostbusters backpack and ghost trap was about the coolest thing ever.
Great.
Even though I didn't actually suck ghosts into it, you had to kind of toss your ghost toys into its gaping maw. I also loved electric race car tracks. Jordan, I saw one of the Toy Hunter episodes where the what was it? It was a Ghostbusters proton pack. Is that it?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, the Proton Pack, sure. It's a great piece. The Ghostbusters Proton Pack was one of the largest toys that Kenner did for the line, that and the Firehouse. But it's a tough piece. It's like a role-playing set for children. I mean, you had this great, you know, giant backpack that you would stick on your back and you'd run around the house like a Ghostbuster. And it was great. And if you had one in the box, you know, they probably go for about $450 right now. And if you have one loose, they probably go for about $200. But you know what? Have fun with them, because I know a guy, let me tell you something, who is a customer of mine, and he still wears his every Halloween with his kid.
I did that. That's important. I did that. I broke mine open, cut open the back side, and stuck lights and a battery in there. I had to have it light up, man.
Yeah. There you go. It's all personal. And, you know, the funny thing is I've actually seen customers do that. I've actually seen people buy very, very expensive toys in the past and open them up right in front of me. And they kind of giggle and say, oh, you're going to hate me for this. But one, it's their toy. Two, they paid for it. And three, this is what they want to do with it. And that's what makes collecting so personal. Yeah. Not only toys. I know people that collect matchsticks and swizzle sticks and cars and basically snow globes. Anything you want to collect, you can collect, and that's okay because it's personable.
801-585-WEST, the number to join us. Don, thanks very much. Back to the phones. Adam is with us in Salt Lake. Adam, welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
It's great
to be here. My favorite toy that I still have today, although he's more of a decoration now instead of I don't really play with him, is this really, really old school Superman action figure. He's pretty small and he's got some karate chop action, but some of his paint's chipped off and I've actually lost the cloth cape that used to clip onto him. And I tried, when the latest Superman came out, I tried buying one of those new Superman action figures that came out, and I noticed like the detail was really cool and it was a nice design, but I thought to myself, it's really clear that they've made an evolution where it's not so much toys that give you nostalgia as it is like action figures that give grown men an excuse to feel okay about buying the toys for themselves instead of little children. But I still look at my Superman every once in a while and it makes me nostalgic for when I used to fling him around on a string.
Yeah. What do you got, a vintage superpowers? Is that what it is?
That's what it sounds like to me, yeah.
Yeah.
Squeeze the legs together. That was done by Kenner Corporation.
But they have the action figures that came out recently, and there's some that have like something that shoots out kryptonite and something that shoots out like laser eyes and stuff like that. So I didn't get any of those guys.
Adam, thanks.
Thank you.
801-585-WEST. Again, the number two to join the conversation. Here's an anonymous email. Someone writes, as an only child of parents going through a chaotic divorce, toys were part of a world I controlled. My toys, mainly Barbies, she writes, became a part of a place where I could be happy without worry.
That's I hear that story an awful lot.
Do you?
Mostly from guys.
Yeah, you too. That's actually fantastic. I mean, you know, there's actually a movement that's happening right now that I'm very fortunate to be part of. Some friends of mine actually started telling me about a doctor in the Midwest, and I forget his name, who's actually practicing toy therapy.
Oh.
And he is a psychologist, psychoanalyst, and he's working with a lot of his patients and helping them achieve these great breakthroughs by giving them toys from their youth, and they can actually grab, you know, something comfortable and become in a comfort zone, and therefore that will allow them to open up and make these giant breakthroughs, which is absolutely incredible. And I'm happy. I hope to, you know, follow that, and hopefully it comes to fruition around here more often.
Here's an email from Samantha, who writes, my favorite toy was my gem and hologram doll with light-up earrings. She didn't last long. Samantha writes, I believe she had a switch on her back that I broke because she went everywhere with me. I was devastated because I remember thinking she was the real gem. And because I broke her earrings, they wouldn't be able to turn into the holograms anymore. Which is like, for Samantha, I wonder, I guess so you kind of, you do imbue them with life, these toys.
They have
love.
They have magic
and
powers,
love.
I think. The powers may be inside your head, but I've seen grown men, very difficult and hard men, brought to tears when they are confronted with a toy from their childhood. It'll just break down any wall and make someone extraordinarily human all of a sudden.
I agree. And toys are the great leveling factor. I mean, everyone was a kid. Chances are everyone had a toy. I don't know what, you know, no matter where you live or what, you know, eco-demographic background you have now, whether you're a celebrity or a working Joe or whatever, everyone had a toy and everyone had their favorite one. So when you get in a room and you start talking about it, everyone's equal. I mean, and everyone can talk about it with love and passion all at the same time. And it really is the great leveling factor.
And whether it was a really expensive toy, top-of-the-line kind of thing, or even a little plastic dinosaur you got out of a gumball machine, everybody has a memory of some kind of toy from their childhood. Even you, Doug. Even you.
I do. Believe me, I do. Kerry Jackson is with us. He is co-host of Radio from Hell on X96, host of the Geek Show podcast, and Jordan Hembro with us, host of The Toy Hunter. Season 2 premieres tomorrow night at 10 Mountain Time on the Travel Channel. You can join us 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We'll take a brief break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about toys. We've gathered a panel of experts today, among them Kerry Jackson of X96 and Jordan Hembro of the cable program Toy Hunter, which is beginning its second season tomorrow night. We'll give you the details about that as we go along. So we're reminiscing a little bit, but also talking about how toys change over time, what they tell us about ourselves. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Joining us on the program also is Philip Weiss, the owner of Philip Weiss Auctions. He specializes in toys, trains, dolls, toy soldiers, and more. He's also an appraiser for the Antiques Roadshow on PBS, and he's joining us by phone from his office in New York, Lynbrook, New York. And Philip Weiss, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me.
I guess one of the things I wanted to get some perspective on from you, Philip Weiss, is sort of the history, I guess. I suppose it's fair to say no matter what the era, no matter what the generation, we've always had toys, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, listening, I've been listening to you guys talk and enjoying the show, and, you know, it makes me feel a little bit older than you guys because my toys were from my childhood toys that I recreated, like everyone else did, were from the early 60s and, you know, Melvin the Moon Man and the Hamilton's Invaders and all the big G.I. Joe figures. So,
well, let's talk about Billy Blastoff later then, because I had one of those.
That's your favorite, right?
My favorite toy. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Very cool. Right. Yeah, and the space toys from that time period, which were really, really great. I mean,
Major Matt Mason?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Matt Mason. Yeah, but even the stuff from the late 50s, early 60s, the, you know, the battery operated tin stuff. So, you know, to me, I've always looked at the toy business through, besides being an auctioneer, but as a collector as well, as being very, I don't want to say cyclical, but more generational. You know, you have customers nowadays come in that are in their 70s and 80s that want to part with their cast iron toy collection because that's what they had when they were kids. And then when you get into the 40s and 50s, you know, the people who were collecting the Marx toys from the 40s and even 30s, 40s, and 50s, you know, they're getting on in years. So I think if you go through every kind of generation, you're going to find that kind of little segment of people who collect a certain type of things that were, you know, there and available for them when they were younger.
This is such a public radio-y question, but, you know, what do toys, do you think, Philip, tell us about a particular culture, a particular time? I mean, I get the idea of the popular culture stuff. You know, we've talked about TV and what was popular in movies and stuff like that. But what else do you think toys tell us about ourselves? I mean, you know, like that we were interested in things like space and that we were worried about things like war or the commies, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, that's definitely a valid point, because if you look back, for example, follow the progression of toy soldiers, for example, when you get into lead toy soldiers, not going way, way back, but let's say around, you know, 1890s when Britain's first started making toy soldier sets, and then you got into the World War I period when people started, you know, following along with, you know, Manoil and Barkley in the 20s and 30s. These all represented, you know, patriotism. I mean, if you look through some of the dime store soldiers that, that come up for sale and that people collect, I mean, it's all a very patriotic theme. So, you know, following the times, you know, historically, I mean, one of my favorite toy companies was the Bliss Company, which started in the early 19th century. But in the late 19th century, 1870s, 80s, 90s, right up until, you know, 1900, 1910, they were making fabulous paper chromolithography on wood toys that would represent, you know, battleships, for example. So during the Spanish-American War, they had the USS Maine, you know, things along that nature. So historic times and, you know, times and things that are going on in a country at that period are always represented in the toys that they're creating.
One thing that was interesting is, how to put this, the racist toys. Philip Weiss, you call them Black Americana. There were a lot of these, I guess, in our past.
Black Americana toys, yeah. And you know what, people immediately think of things going back to the Civil War era, but right up and through the 1930s and 40s, Mark's Toy Company, one of the biggest toy manufacturers in the world, was famous for making very politically incorrect toys, wind-up toys. You had, you know,
the tin toys, yep.
Jim and Spick and Span, the band, the wind-up band. I mean, if you really search the history of the toy companies during that time period, you would not be able to create toys like that today.
Jordan, you encounter those toys that
You know, it's funny. I actually do, and you know, it's not something we've addressed on the show yet. But you know, it's nothing. You know, you really don't want to use the word racist or politically incorrect, because at that time period, that's what was generally being accepted in culture. And you know, our views have changed throughout history and everything and as a culture. But, you know, Philip is absolutely correct. I mean, I remember, and I've seen them a lot, about the Marx Toy Company making tin, you know, jalopies that you know, and all the characters and everything like that, the Gollywog dolls and the Black Americana and everything like that. Believe it or not, it's actually highly collected by some people. I sell to a lot of people, you know, black collectors who collect black toys, and it's a part of history and everything like that. And it does speak to the time period we were living in.
What do you think, Carrie? Let me start with you. What do you, like the toys of today? What are they? If you were to just sort of look at the culture by just looking at the toys, what do you think it would of today? What would it say about us? Do you think? Do you have a sense of that?
Well, using the racist toy example, we just recently had a group of toys that a lot of people didn't consider racist that were pulled because they were racist, and that was the Django Unchained action figures. Now these were meant for adults. Kids weren't going to buy them. They were for adult collectors, but they were pulled because they were perceived as racist. So maybe that's got something to say about our society, is that we're
pretty sensitive.
We're a little maybe too sensitive. Maybe we've gone to – I don't know. Anyone else want to weigh in on this? Someone smarter than me?
Hey, Jordan, perhaps? What do you think? I mean, if you just look at the toys, what do they tell us about? I mean, you know, you see the space stuff. You see the action hero-y stuff, but you always saw that. Was there anything mm-hmm. distinctive in the toys these days? Or?
You know, it's so broad. I mean, I could tell you back, true. You know, we were talking about our country as, you know, as the way it changed and everything like that. I mean, a hot topic back in the 60s was G.I. Joe. And during the Vietnam War, G.I. Joe was a soldier. And then after the Vietnam War, nobody wanted to talk about Vietnam or anything. Mm. So G.I. Joe went from a fighting soldier to a man of action. He went on all these adventures and everything. Yeah. Society reflects what we make. You know, if I want to make a comment about today's toys... Carrie's actually got the best example that's come up recently is these Django Unchained dolls. I mean, it caused a big controversy in the toy market. I happen to know the manufacturer that is making the toys. I happen to know the head of development who actually made the Django Unchained toys. And I can tell you, you know, to the guy's credit, you know, they stopped production. They destroyed all the dolls. And the president of the company actually went around to the employees and said, listen, I need back all your dolls. You know, he took a stance. He could have just said, "I'm going to do it anyhow and make them," but he didn't. I don't want to say he caved under the pressure. I want to say he was sympathetic to what people, you know, what people were saying, and I think it was the right move politically on his part. And I think it was the right business decision.
Here's an email from Ted who writes, as a kid, I was obsessed with secret agents, and I couldn't get enough of James Bond, the man from Uncle and such. My favorite toy, he writes, was a James Bond 007 attaché case.
Ooh.
It came complete with a pistol and a silencer and even a passport. The first time I ever recall hearing of Rio de Janeiro or Cairo was via the 007 passport.
So it was an educational toy.
Yeah, see? There you go. He says, just out of curiosity, I looked on eBay the other day, and those toy attaché cases are selling for upwards of $600.
They even go higher than that.
I hate to admit it, but I still have the little knife that you push the button on the side and it turns into a gun.
That was
one of my desk drawers somewhere.
And that was actually on our show. That was on Toy Hunter on Travel Channel.
Wow.
It was during the holiday special. I went hunting for one, and I found one. And the guy had a complete one in the box, and he didn't want to sell it. He kept it. I still talked to the guy and said, you want to sell it yet? He goes, nope, it's mine. And it's just an incredible piece.
Yeah. 801-585-WEST, the number two, join the conversation. Let's go back to the phones. Mike is with us in Ogden. Mike, hi.
Hi. Thank you for allowing me to be on your show. One of my big things was to collect a lot of the Star Trek memorabilia. I'm still collecting some today. But I was going to also say that I noticed that our toys actually shape who we're going to be. And I always liked the G.I. Joe stuff. I ended up joining the military and retired. I liked Star Trek, which now I'm a physics and math major at Weber State.
Wow.
And I do a little robotics on the side because I always wanted
That's incredible.
Robots to watch Lost in Space. And who wouldn't want a robot that can cut your grass nowadays? But I started getting into that autonomous vehicle challenge over at Spark Fund in Colorado. But I just want to say thank you for letting me be on your show.
Yeah, glad you did.
Did he say Lost
thank
in Space?
You.
I brought my Lost in Space robot toy today.
Well, robots, that's a big thing. I mean, play that again.
All right, here we go.
Is this a favorite?
It's one of my favorite toys. It's the old Lost in Space robot.
Yeah.
And
that was the classic 60s robot voice. All robots sounded like that.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
No emotion.
And Philip Weiss, and robots, that's a theme that's been around a long time.
Yes.
Huge area collecting, guys. I remember a number of years ago we had a sale. It was probably one of our most well-attended sales with a single-owner robot collection. And, you know, space toys are just incredibly popular. It's one of the few areas in toy collecting I can honestly say you rarely see the prices dipping too much. Especially when you get into the stuff from the 50s and 60s with the original boxes, they just go crazy prices.
Yeah. So an email from Scott. My two brothers and I loved to play with Hot Wheels cars, but that was not my fave. It was a cloth town my mother made for us on her sewing machine. It was one of a kind, and with all the mid-80s Salt Lake City landmarks, like the Salt Palace, Hires, and that old store called Grand Junction.
I just got chills because my mom made one of those, too.
Is that right?
Yes, I had one of those.
Well, and Ellen writes, my favorite toys were made by my mother, a set of stuffed characters from Winnie the Pooh. I had Pooh, Kanga, Roo, Piglet, and my favorite Eeyore.
That's cool.
Jordan, you encounter those, too, the ones that aren't brand names, that stuff your mom makes?
I do. You know, it's funny because, you know, I go around and my job is to bring back the memories of the pop culture and everything to the clients, and it's usually mainstream stuff. And a lot of times I come across collectors that have handmade action figures they did themselves, or handmade dolls that their parents made, and you see it so much in the community as well, and Philip and Carrie will tell you as well, collectors are very, very we've got a lot of ingenuity. And if there was an action figure made, not a problem. We'll just make our own. We'll repaint one, or we'll pull the legs off of one and the arms off another. We'll make our own action figure. And a lot of stuff I find is handmade stuff. And people say, that's my favorite. I made that when I was 8 years old. That's my Wolverine figure, from such and such comic. I'm not selling that. And I think it's a really, really personal type of thing, because not only is it something you had when you were a child, it's something you made when you were a child. So you really sort of... I mean, you created it, and I see that a lot, these handmade toys that people, either got from their parents or made themselves, and they want to hold on to them. And I don't argue with that. I don't argue with the emotional attachment, because you can't compete with that, and I usually don't.
801-585-WEST, the number two to join us. Do you want to say something?
Well, I was just going to say the handmade action figures. Some of my favorite action figures in my collection are made by a friend of mine. Punk is his name. And I would make requests of him to make action figures for me because they weren't available. These certain characters weren't available, and he would make them. And then, sure enough, 3 years later, the company decided to make them. And mine is still better. The one that he made is still better than the ones that you could buy.
Kerry Jackson with us, co-host of Radio from Hell on X96. Jordan Hembro, host of The Toy Hunter, Season 2. Premieres tomorrow night at 10 Mountain Time on the Travel Channel. And Philip Weiss is also with us, an appraiser with the Antiques Roadshow on PBS. He runs an auction house in Lynbrook, New York. You can join us 801-585-WEST, our email address radiowest@kuer.org. We're going to take another break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about toys, and we're hoping to hear from you. We've gathered a panel of experts. Kerry Jackson is with us, co-host of Radio from Hell on X96. We have Philip Weiss, an appraiser with the Antiques Roadshow, joining us by phone, and Jordan Hembro, host, of course, of The Toy Hunter on the Travel Channel. Season 2 premieres tomorrow night. We'll give you the details about that as we go along. But you can join us, 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Let's go back to the phones. Richard is with us in Cedar City. Richard, sorry for the wait. Welcome.
Al, it's nice to talk to you. I really appreciated the comments of your guests and the phone people. I'm actually a toy maker. My favorite toys are when you talk about antique toys being in the 50s, mine are way back. They're more of the mechanical pole toys, wooden toys, hardwood toys. I make them for my grandkids. And, of course, we have other toys around, and I notice that they'll play with the more modern toys for a while, but they always come back to these action pull toys that pop, or their heads bob, or the wings flap, or they have some action to them. When they see these actions, they want to know how it's done. They want to look in and see that it's there's a cam in there, or there's a lift of some kind that makes the wings move, and they're more fascinated with that. And as I've done a little bit of research, psychologists are saying that it's the modern toy doesn't give the child an opportunity to see these kinds of things happening. And it, like one caller mentioned that, he went into the military because he played with military toys. Well, this author was saying that a lot of our young people are not going into the sciences like engineering and that as they used to, because they didn't get a chance to play with these mechanical kind of toys where they saw these mechanical processes in action.
Huh. Weren't a lot of those toys made illegal because they were allegedly unsafe, although the rest of us seemed to play with them and live just fine? I have all my fingers. I mean, like chemistry sets. You can't get a chemistry set anymore, can you?
I don't think so.
That's a good question. And I actually want to take – Richard, thanks very much, because I want to actually get to this question of how toys might be changing. But let me sort of stop where – because I'm looking at this bucket that Kerry has right there, and it says warning choking hazard, which kind of leads to the question of how have lawsuits and litigation, how have they changed toys? Jordan?
They've changed the face of toys. They've changed the face of the industry. I mean, most recently with Mattel Mattel Corporation and the lead paint. I mean, it's – you know, we're living in a sanitized world right now when it comes to toys. And you know, to an extent, justifiably, we should, because these are for our children and we do want to keep our children safe. Does it go overboard sometimes? I think it does. I mean, I was a child of the 70s and I survived just fine. And Kerry has all his fingers. do you have all your toes?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I remember playing on jungle gyms and seesaws in the playground that were metal. Now they're all foam and they're rounded corners and everything like that. You know, I think what it is as a society, we're as culture and society sort of gets maybe a little crazier that we can't control it, we're trying to control as much as we can to keep our children safe. And that's why all these laws are in place right now. And you know, just to really make everything safe. And it truly is changing everything. I mean, right now, if you go and pick up something like an Easy Bake oven or the food you buy, they have every single nutritional component and everything because you're worried about allergies.
And wasn't it just a hot light bulb?
It was. That's all the Easy Bake oven was.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Let me ask Jordan,
a hot light bulb.
On the safety of toys subject, is the legend of the Boba Fett rocket-firing backpack true? The reason that we didn't get that is because of some kid and a Battlestar Galactica toy. Is that true?
It's funny. You know what? Let me tell you. First of all, I work with very, very closely. I work with a gentleman that invented it, in the rocket-firing Boba Fett. And I worked with a lot of folks at Kenner. You know, nobody has cited that specifically. There was a rumored choking hazard of the Battlestar Galactica missile. Other people said it was a rocket out of a Batmobile by Corgi. But the fact of the matter is Kenner basically said, you know what, at this time, maybe it's not such a good idea, so we're going to sort of hold off on the spring-loaded projectile.
It wasn't
it was one of those rumors.
It's true. It wasn't until we were 40 that we could get rocket-firing backpack on the Boba Fett.
That's right, and they're awesome now.
They're
now
great.
I shoot it in my eye.
Yes.
801-585-WEST, the number to join the conversation. So, Philip Weiss, let me come to you on the question that Richard was sort of getting at, which is, so, you know, you've got the sort of pole toys and these lovely, you know, wooden toys and stuff like that. But when you're in an information age and, you know, when you're in the digital era, when you have so many games you can play, you know, interactive games, on, you know, video games, games that you can play with your tablet, with your phone, are toys going away or are they changing in some way?
You know, I have to admit that I kind of agree with what Richard was saying, in a way that, you know, it's less imagination nowadays, even though the games are more imaginative. You know, when you talk about using pull toys, simple Fisher-Price toys from the 1930s, I mean, kids could look underneath it and see how it worked, and they could create their own that way. If you go back further to the automatons, which were phenomenally intricate, I mean, to recreate something like that, the kids would, you know, to study that, they'd get a total education in you know, toy building and toy making. Nowadays, everything's packaged. You can't open it up. I mean, granted, my kids will take apart a game system and put it back together. But, you know, you do lose a lot of the imagination. You really do. It's kind of much, much simpler. It's laid out for the kids now where they just press the buttons and go.
But
I think they lose the imagination.
Here's something Ed says. Ed writes to us saying, it's not the toy or how sophisticated it is. He says, it's the play it inspires.
Exactly.
At any age. He said, children and adults learn to adapt to the world through play. It's part of growth. And I guess it doesn't really – Carrie, are you saying the generation doesn't necessarily matter in that
sense?
I don't
think it matters. I think it all depends on the kid and what he is able to do with it, whether the toy does everything like this R2-D2 that I brought in.
Turn that sucker on.
Or a simple like the Green Army Man. I think it's all entirely, you know, some kids just aren't very imaginative. You could give them the greatest toys in the world, and they're just going to look at them or put them in their mouths, you know.
Jordan, where are you on this
question? I agree. I mean, I agree with that. What the rest of the gentlemen say. It truly is. I think it's based on the individual. You know, the funny thing is, you know, do you guys know what the average shelf life of a toy is at the retail level? It's 2 weeks. That's exactly what it is. Manufacturers know that they have 2 weeks on the shelf before a child gets tired of it and moves on. And that's why the biggest demographic that toy companies are aiming towards right now is preschool. So that age, that crucial age from about 2 to 5, because chances are children from 2 to 5 are more likely to play with their toys and become sort of engrossed in that world of play than the older kids, because they've got such a shorter time span.
Wow. That's amazing.
I've never heard that. That's
See, Carrie, you learned something.
Oh, that's blowing me away. Thank you, Jordan.
801-585-WEST, the number to join us. Let's go back to the phones. Nate is with us. Nate, welcome.
Yes. As a child of the 50s and 60s, my favorite toys were put out by companies like Lewis Marks. They did whole numbers of what are called play sets that had plastic figures and accessories and tin lithograph buildings, like, say, a ranch house, for which was my favorite, the Roy Rogers Ranch, or Frontier Forts, or some of the best historical ones, the blue and gray Civil War battlefield ones. And there is still a huge market for those toys. out there now. There are numbers of collectors, and there's even a publication called Playset Magazine mm-hmm. that people subscribe to, and they buy and sell and trade these sets.
Jordan, you're nodding, right? I mean, I can imagine you sort of nodding away.
You know what? I mean, and of course, Philip and Carrie know exactly what these are. And Philip, mm-hmm. you probably do too, because I gather you deal with a lot of the older stuff. Louis yeah. Marx, this guy, that whole company, they were fantastic at creating these giant play sets. And not only is the blue and the gray, but they had Roman play sets and all
Ben-Hur.
These, basically everything. The thing Ben-Hur. About Louis Marx play sets in the box right now is it's incredibly difficult to find them complete. You know, because they had yep. so many different parts and everything. But when you can, I mean, I haven't, to be honest with you, and I'll be honest, I haven't bought a blue and the gray playset in a long time. But back in 19, probably about 98, the last time I had one, it was going for about $800. Mm. I mean, yeah, it's big bucks.
They're incredibly. I mean, we set a record on one for I believe it was the wagon train playset went for $11,000 or $12,000. So it's not even
incredible
anymore of people buying them to enjoy. I mean, as much as everybody would love to open it up and play with it, you're not going to spend $12,000 very easily and open up the set. This was sealed in the box. No fun to me. I mean, you don't even know what's inside of it. But the play sets was super imaginative and let the kids have incredible amount of fun.
It's still true today. I know a guy who works at a local toy store, and I ask him, I said, what's your biggest seller? I thought he'd say, WrestleMania or something like that, yeah. or the Avengers. And he says, I can't keep in those plastic Army Men play sets.
Wow. Yeah.
The plastic yeah. Army Men yeah. or the little cowboys or the astronauts or the scuba divers, he says, they just fly right off the shelves. They are the yeah. biggest seller.
You ever go to those like IFA or some of these farm stores, and they have little animals, like mm-hmm. dozens of those
mm-hmm.
things.
Little plastic farm sets.
Those things.
They just sell like crazy.
Yeah.
People love them.
Here's an email from John. My favorite was a tabletop pinball machine where the theme was baseball. Very bright colored lights that would indicate base hit, double, triple, home run, strikeout, etc. Battery powered. Very, very cool. 801-585-WEST, the number to join the conversation. Let's go back to the phones. Let's see. Andrew is with us in Provo. Andrew, hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead.
I just want to hear about your commentator's take on Legos, because when I was growing up, I wasn't really into action figures. I found Legos to be a lot more creative and found a little bit more interesting than action figures. So maybe I could just hear a little bit what they would have to say about that.
Well, now one of the biggest selling action figures is Lego action figures. That's what you buy now. You could buy them in a separate set. You need your Luke Skywalker Lego.
The caved.
Yeah.
Jordan, what do you think about Lego? Is it a different category? Is this a different genre?
It's funny. Lego is really emerging as this giant juggernaut entity of its own. They're from Sweden. Lego actually means, literally translated, the word Lego means play well. So to play well. But the beautiful thing about Lego Corporation is they're almost instant collectibles. I mean, within 1 or 2 years, that stuff is shooting up in value, and it's for a simple reason. Lego makes a limited edition number of play sets. They say, you know what? Here's a play set. We're going to put out Harry Potter play set. We're going to make 1,000 pieces. And when it's done, it's done. I mean, you can't find it anymore. And this is worldwide, or 2,000 pieces or whatever. So what's happening is they're not like other toy corporations or manufacturing corporations that will go and say, wow, we did so much. Let's do another run of 50,000. Lego basically, it's automatically preserving the collectability of the toy by manufacturing less at, when they go into production. So it's huge right now. And Lego is customizable, and you can put all the play sets together. The figures are cool. The play sets are just awesome. And it inspires creativity among the children because they build them. So you're watching this play set come to life. And it's not just for kids anymore, especially not when you're talking about, and Philip and Carrie will agree, not when you're talking about a Millennium Falcon Lego set that has like 3,000 pieces or 4,000 and, basically has an instruction manual the size of, the Bible.
You
it's
need
huge.
It.
Huge.
yeah. Guys, getting back to what we were talking about before where you're saying how, generational, it's almost like Legos are kids today. You had the Kenner Turnpike sets. I don't know if you remember those, but the Kenner Build-A-Building sets.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the Bridge and Girder sets. Yeah,
oh, yeah. Sure. They were awesome.
You had the Lincoln Logs before that. So yeah, every generation has had their building sets.
It just evolves,
These are awesome. The new ones are really cool.
And Lego is in the movies now. They're making a movie.
Yeah.
Lego movie is coming.
801-585-WEST, the number to join us. Time, I think, for one more call. Carrie has been waiting in Ogden. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
So I just wanted to say my husband collects action figures. He does superheroes, Star Wars, Lord of the Rings. But when it comes to his action figure collection, it's a collection that he started when he was six or mm-hmm. when he was a small child with his father, and his dad died when he was six. He was left the superhero collection, and members of his family actually took it from him, so he never had it. So once he got into his 20s, had disposable income, he decided to regain that collection, to regain that connection with his dad. And, you know, throughout his 20s and 30s, he's combed thrift stores and swap meets and everything and regained this entire giant collection. And I think it's really just a way for him to connect with his father. And, you know, and over the past year, he actually sold his superhero collection for $1,000 to pay some adult bills. But I think it was okay with him because it was on his terms.
Yeah.
And it was a sense of closure for him with his father.
That's a beautiful story.
Yeah, that's nice. Let me ask you all this finally. When is it... Jordan, Carey, Philip, quickly, because we don't have much time.
Okay.
Philip, I'll start with you. When is it okay to let go of a toy? When do you say, I'm going to let go of this at this point?
You know what? Each individual will realize when it's time. I mean, it's just as simple as that. There's never a precise moment to do it. You just finally take a look at it and say, hey, you know what? It's outlived its usefulness. Let me pass it on. Let me sell it and replace it with something else. Don't ever not replace it. You got to fill in with something else.
Carey?
I think it's easier to find the toys that you won't let go of. It's that's easy. Like Muffet 2 here for the Battlestar Galactica line. I will never let him go. Dear memories of my mother there. I'll never let him go.
Yeah, yeah. And Jordan?
I agree with Philip and Carey, both of them. Directly, you know, Philip hit it right on the nose. I mean, everything's personable. Do it on your own terms.
Philip Weiss is an appraiser for the Antiques Roadshow on PBS. He runs an auction house in Lynbrook, New York. Philip, thanks very much for the time.
Thank you so much, guys. It's a pleasure, and it was a real honor to be on the show with you guys.
Thanks, Philip.
Carey Jackson, of course, co-host of Radio from Hell on X96 and host of the Geek Show podcast. We'll put a link to that on our website. Carey, good to see you again.
Thank you very much.
And let's mention Jordan Hembro, of course, the host of Toy Hunter. Season 2 premieres tomorrow night at 10 p.m. Mountain Time on the Travel Channel. We'll put a link to that on our website. Jordan, thanks. It's been fun having you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Radio West, a production of KUER News, the program directed by Mike Anderson, produced by Benjamin Bombard, Andy Lane Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.